all kinds of stuff is going on right now. We're on the brink of a do-or-die election. Philly, Seattle, L.A. are still having riots. I refuse to call those civil unrest. That's a bullshit term. Many places are still in lockdown. In short, America is in more turmoil than it has been since the Civil War. And a lot of people think Civil War II is in progress. They might be right, but no matter what happens, you will still be you. No matter who is in the White House or whatever city is burning or news story is white hot, you still want to be the best version of you possible. And no matter how smart you are, it all begins with the physical you. Are you all you want to be? Whether you want to drop 10 pounds or 100, or bulk up and be more formidable, feared by men and desired by chicks, this is your episode.
The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
Larry.
Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry. Larry. Larry.
Here we are on the doorstep of another holiday season when we gorge and guzzle like sled dogs on the Iditarod. And then, when New Year's rolls around, which is only in about 8 weeks, we'll stand on a scale, be disgusted with ourselves, and make some resolutions that we won't be keeping. Who even knows if gyms will be open by then? Now, usually I leave listener mail and advice to the latter part of the show, but I get this email that was so damn compelling and fits so perfectly with the theme of this episode, I have to do it up front. I always guarantee discretion, so his name shall be Mike. And though he preferred to remain anonymous, as always happens with our fantastic listeners, he urged me to share his letter with all of you that some of you might benefit. Does this show have the coolest listeners? Hell yeah, it really does. Here's what Mike has to say. Hey Larry, long-time listener, first-time writer. Your show has been a source of guidance to me. I'm wondering if you might be able to tackle a topic at the TNS Dojo that I haven't heard yet. Weight. I am what most people would call a fat fuck. I'm not talking LA chubby. I'm talking full-on shops only at the big and tall store, looks at chairs and dining booths with caution, fat. Growing up in the chaos I did, I took to food like others take to booze, drugs, sex, work, etc. Something to numb out the everyday bullshit. Unfortunately, everyone can notice that struggle from a mile away on the street, whereas your typical booze hound or junkie can blend in to the crowd. Part of me wants to give a big fat middle finger to the world. Yes, I'm a fat ass, I got a problem, and I don't like it either, but I'm a human being, goddammit. I got feelings, hopes, desires, and deserve to take no shit just as much as anyone else. But also part of me is just tired of putting up the tough front. Because right or wrong, it does bother me. I don't like how I look, how I move, how I have to dress, where I have to buy clothes, not to mention fucking airlines, swimming pools, stiff joints, and health risks. Mostly I'm just tired of feeling ashamed about it. If feeling shame burnt calories, there wouldn't be a single fat person on earth. So what does one do? Is the answer, like so many things, somewhere in the golden medium? Or does one abandon both these ways of thinking in hopes of writing a better, happier, maybe thinner next chapter? Any guidance you can give would be greatly appreciated. And then Mike added a fantastic PS in a second email. Here that is. I bet more of your fans than just me struggle with weight in this day and age, and they could profit greatly from your wisdom if this were to go to your podcast. Granted, men don't take as much shit as women do for being fat, but at the same time, Men aren't getting any million-dollar Dove campaigns telling them to embrace their curves or love the skin they're in. I feel that men, being men, tend to view this shortcoming, like many others, as a personal defect of character. And thus, they take shit from a lot of sources, but mostly, sadly, themselves. You serve as a great sensei father figure for us that didn't have good ones, or none at all. No matter what course you take, I'm glad you were at least there to listen. Thank you so much, Mr. Blydner. Wow. Thank you, Mike. I am humbled by your kind words. Before I get started, let me say this. Your chances of weight loss success are fantastic. Much better than most. Why? Because the truth will set you free and slim you down. You, my friend, are honest in your self-appraisal. The first step in beating a problem is acknowledging that problem, and so you have. We live in an age of lies. There have always been lies, but now vast numbers of people feel they have a right to demand that we not only accept their lies, but endorse, embrace, and parrot those lies. And one of the most popular lies is healthy at any size. Bullshit. Ask any doctor. Or ask the Chinese virus. After the elderly, its next biggest fatalities are the obese. That is a super dangerous comorbidity. Some time ago, I wrote a book called Mac Daddy, Mastering Fatherhood Without Losing Your Style, Your Cool, or Your Mind. The book sold pretty well. It also became a lightning rod because of the truth bombs I dropped throughout it. I wrote it because I had recently become a dad, and when that happens, job number one is not to raise your kid. It's to make sure you live long enough to raise your kid. A lot of dads don't. Now, when their demise is self-orchestrated, well, that's a hell of a tragedy. I covered weight loss a bit in that book, and the takeaway was a simple four-word plan anyone can follow, and those words are: move more, eat less. People like to complicate that with intricate diets and exercise programs, and some do need to. No one who is morbidly obese should starve themselves and start running wind sprints. That would be a terrible idea. But the essence of weight loss, the foundation of it, is those four words, with a program tailored for you by a doctor or nutritionist, someone who knows their stuff. My intention here is to help you stick with whatever program they give you. Obesity is a product of a sedentary life and overeating. And American obesity is a newer phenomenon. And it seems like it's a very American problem. When I visited Europe 3 years ago, I saw almost no one seriously overweight. Grab your laptop or tablet. Don't Google. Google is a commie outfit that tracks you. Instead, do a DuckDuckGo image search for crowds, you know, at ballparks or world's fairs or anywhere in the 20th century up until about the 1990s. And when you see those images or videos of crowds, look for fat people. You won't find many, or any in some cases. There will be none. Obesity used to be really, really uncommon. Health officials say 43% of Americans are obese. Why would that be? What changed in the last 30 years? Some blame fast food and processed food. Could be a factor. But there was plenty of that crap around in the second half of the 20th century. McDonald's, Burger King, KFC, they've been selling us robot shit for a long time. Billions and billions served, said the McDonald's sign, and they weren't kidding. What's different? The internet and devices, that's what. Cell phones, tablets, laptops, social media, video games, we've never been more sedentary than we are right now. Plus, so many jobs are done on keyboards and telephones. We spend lethal amounts of time sitting on our asses, immobile. And now with this lockdown bullshit, watch obesity skyrocket even more. Is it a coincidence that the world's richest corporation is Apple? If only we bought the fruit and not the phones. In my grammar school, in the entire school, which probably had 600, maybe 800 kids, there was one fat kid. One. Sure, there were a couple others that were a little chubby. They had a name for those guys back then. Husky. But there was only one fat kid, and his name was Alan. Nice kid. No meaning him at all. And sadly, his fatness came to define who he was. He lived up to that stupid myth that fat people are jolly. And he was mercilessly mocked, and since he was too fat to kick anyone's ass, he took on the persona of fat clown. He laughed at himself, his own humiliations, constantly. It was awful. He became a living punchline. He was anything but jolly. Alan was the stuff that suicides are made of. There was also in my school one fat teacher. This dude was big, about a quarter ton. He taught fifth grade, and in the lower grades, everyone would ask about him. And other teachers would say, oh, well, Mr. Ronzoni, he has a glandular problem. And being kids, we accepted that. Then when I got to fifth grade, I watched him many times in class, grazing as he sat at his desk. He would wash down a full dozen donuts or ringdings or devil dogs with buttermilk or heavy cream. Once we watched him slather two oversized bagels with Philly cream cheese. He piled on all the Philly he could, and instead of putting the remaining cream cheese away, he chomped it right in the foil wrapper like a fucking popsicle. And then, at only 10 years of age, I realized he did have a glandular problem, if your brain is a gland. I once worked with a young woman who was very obese. She was a wonderful person, smart, fun, hardworking. We were good friends. And once in conversation, she said the phrase, because of my disease. And I didn't know what she meant. She saw that I did not understand. And then she said, my disease, my weight problem. Her diet wasn't terribly different from Mr. Ronzoni's. But she or some expert had convinced her that her obesity was not a health issue that could be fixed by hard work and self-discipline, but an illness like tuberculosis or cancer. And when people have a disease, that pretty much absolves them of any responsibility, doesn't it? Same as when alcoholics and drug addicts claim they have a disease. Except when one stops ingesting booze or drugs, the disease magically disappears. If only real diseases worked that way, Of course, weight gain can sneak up on us. Doesn't happen after one pizza. It takes months, years, and we all bullshit ourselves, don't we? We hop on the scale and say, well, I'm only 20 pounds overweight. Doesn't seem like very much. I use a gimmick that helps put that only 20 pounds into perspective. Grab a 20-pound dumbbell or 2.5 gallons of water and walk around lugging those for 5 or 10 minutes and see how fantastic you feel when you drop them. Now, Mike, you said something interesting I'll quote here, and you might consider expunging the statement before you start your journey to fitness. Quote, part of me wants to give a big fat middle finger to the world. Yes, I'm a fat ass. I got a problem, and I don't like it either. But I'm a human being, goddammit. I got feelings, hopes, desires, and deserve to take no shit just as much as anyone else. Unquote. All true, Mike. Every word of it. You can say, fuck you, world. But the world is going to say, fuck you, back. Homo sapiens are not going to change their DNA to suit you or anyone. Human beings are hardwired to be attracted to other healthy human beings, not unhealthy ones. And no one that's 100 pounds overweight is healthy. So Mike, as you get your game brain on, why not borrow a couple of axioms from Alcoholics Anonymous? First, one day at a time. And it's going to take a lot of those days strung together to become the dude you want to be. But if you set attainable goals, you will have success. And every time you get on that scale and see you're just a little bit lighter, you're going to feel great and be motivated to drop more weight. Whenever possible, put down the phone, the tablet, walk away from the computer or TV. Food is your habit, and the internet is enabling and amplifying that habit. When you move, when you exercise, try to make it as pleasant as possible so you look forward to it. If it's walking or jogging or bike riding, whatever, don't let it become a grind. Switch it up. Get to someplace scenic, or at least different, so boredom doesn't set in. Pop in the earbuds for some tunes or a podcast. Reward yourself along the journey, not just at the finish line. When you meet goals, treat yourself to something, but not food or video games, and not clothing, because it will soon be too big for you. Maybe keep a jar to finance something you've always wanted. A pair of, I don't know, cool cufflinks or some toy, whatever it is. And toss a few bucks in each time you meet a goal. Here's another piece of advice to take from AA. Progress, not perfection. There will be days, or even weeks, when it will seem as if nothing's happening. You might get on that scale and see no decrease, maybe a slight increase. Do not lose heart. Do not give up. Over time, you will succeed. They say breaking a habit takes anywhere from 3 to 10 weeks. That's not a very long time. And damn near everything we do is habitual. The way we shave, brush our teeth, dress, we do all these things in the same way our entire lives. Some say that changing those little things help you with the bigger ones. They sort of acclimate your mind to new routines. So give it a shot. Start shaving from the other side of your face, put your shoes on in a different sequence, and so on. Mike, I have no doubt you will achieve your goal and reach a healthy weight. And once you do, you may want to go beyond that status and shape yourself into a dude that is more than normal. The same exact principles apply. If you want 18-inch biceps, dinner plate pecs, and a 32-inch waist, it's going to take some work. Southern California is the fitness and bodybuilding capital of the world. I used to work out at a gym where some very famous bodybuilders and athletes did. And I recall overhearing a conversation between a beginner and a chick who was the reigning Miss Olympia. She was incredible. And this very out-of-shape beginner asked her if she liked working out. And Miss Olympia said she hated every minute of it. But she loved the results. That about says it. Nothing worth doing is ever easy. But here's the good news. The longer you do it, the easier it gets, until weight control and fitness is literally a habit. Good luck to you, Mike. Not that I think you'll need it. I think you're going to look and feel great. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. The election is less than a week away. Don't forget to vote in person, if possible. Those mail-in ballots are much easier to fuck with. Stop by the show page for more comment and commentary at thatlarryshow.com. There you'll also find an archive of 279 other episodes. Click the subscribe button, Apple, Google, whatever you prefer. It costs nothing, and that way you never miss an episode. Now, I know I promised a new bonus episode before this one, but a couple of things went sideways, and so it will be a smidge late. It's my third interview ever with the most feared man in podcasting, the infamous Carl of the show. Who are these podcasts? Carl listens to these shit shows and then mocks them mercilessly. It's a fuck ton of fun. In the interview, we get beyond the shows and into the hot zone of doxing, death threats, and what happens when co-hosts lose their shit. It will be available only at patreon.com/thatlarryshow. Follow this show on Facebook and Twitter. The moment Carl's episode drops, I'll announce it there and you can have a listen. And oh yeah, it's almost Halloween. Last week's episode featured a sexually charged Halloween party of my dreams, along with maybe the pointiest, most wicked-looking chick of all time. Both are waiting for you, at no charge, at thatlarryshow.com. My friends, whatever battle you're fighting, weight loss, employment problems, loneliness, maybe a romance gone wrong, you can win that battle with truth and action. I'll see you next Wednesday. And until that time, take no shit.